Hello, guys and girls. The program you are about to hear will be both fun and educational, but it is not a substitute for medical advice. Although we are doctors, we are not your doctors. Hello and welcome to Travel Medicine. As always, I'm your friendly neighborhood internal medicine doc, Dr. J.
Hi guys, Santosh here, your pediatric infectious disease doc and researcher.
Hey, and it's Dr. Ward here, your local ER doc.
Joined by our two special guests.
For the first time ever on the Travel Medicine podcast, it's Praz the Sandman putting you all to sleep. Wait, that didn't sound right, did it?
Not until the end of the show, man.
For people who don't get the beautiful medical reference that Praz is trying to make, he is an anesthesiologist.
And what anesthesiologist goes unaccompanied without some surgeon near at hand? And so we brought back fan favorites.
So good to be back. I'm sorry I've been absent all season, but it is fabulous to join the crew again.
Yeah, Susanna's been busy actually being a doctor.
It's overrated. This is our final episode of the season, so guys, Save up all your ear hole fillings, because we won't be back again till October. That sentence came out badly.
It came out terribly, but I think I can help make up for it. You guys can actually go back to previous episodes, and it's a great way to spend your time.
You know, for all the trouble I'm having with language today, Santosh, it fits in perfectly with our topic, because to finish up the season, we're going to talk about the language of medicine and the language unique to medicine. There's quite a lot of doctor slang.
Yeah.
So, And I'm guessing that each of us coming from our own different specialty has probably heard a lot of different slang, both about patients and about each other. And this would be a good time to kind of take a peek behind the curtain and see how we help to keep our stress levels down and our vocabulary up.
Yeah, and there are plenty of medical dramas and comedies where we come upon medical talk and doctor speak. And openly, admittedly, I think every one of us can say that yes, we sometimes just throw out some doc talk because we need to take a breath and say something funny and talk to our colleagues so that we can better do our jobs to take care of you guys.
Well, when we were in medical school, we were actually almost taught a different set of language and a different set of vocabulary. In the operating room, you wouldn't say, "I'm cutting into a leg," right? You say, "I'm cutting into the medial malleolus," or cutting into the, God, my anatomy sucks, but that muscle, the lateral malleolus.
The thing.
The knee bone connected to the thigh bone.
You cut into the thigh bone. But you know, if you hear a doctor saying, "Hey, I'm going to cut into the thigh bone," you know, there's an issue.
And I actually read that when we go through medical training, we do learn enough new vocabulary to qualify or at least be similar to somebody that goes out and learns a new language like French or Spanish or Latin. So it is medicalese.
Now, while some of what you are going to hear on this show could definitely be construed as derogatory slang, some of it is actually a way to pack a lot of information into a single phrase, or even shorthand for when we're practicing. For example, high five when referring to a patient to give other staff a heads up that they will be working on somebody with HIV. Now, in medicine, not a big deal, but in surgery, where it can be transmitted by blood, that might be useful information to know. Why don't we get started with, I think, one of my favorite stories, Santosh, when you taught me about Spanish CPR and status Hispanicus.
So this is, if we want to talk about the least apropos things that we should be saying, this is a good example. And I was down in Miami. I was a resident. And this was the very typical look. I don't know. I'd say Latina mother, usually, or grandma, who would run around screaming, "Oh yeah, yeah, yeah! Oh, my, you have to help! You have to!" You know, when nothing was wrong, absolutely nothing was wrong. Mm-hmm. We're all okay. It's going to be all right, ma'am. And she still had to run around and ay 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 ay. So that was.
And we should specify this is almost always the eldest female relative of the patient, not the patient themselves. And in areas that do not have the same Spanish population as Miami, this is known as status dramaticus.
Yes, that's another. That's another excellent term.
Which I think we should clarify that status asthmaticus, which is an actual medical condition when somebody has such severe asthma that they won't break and they can't breathe,
right.
Is so, a medical term that we really use.
So that's a real thing. So this is status asthmaticus. And status asthmaticus, the person does not need to be Latino and yelling and screaming and running around in.
So I can have status Hispanicus too?
You can totally be status Hispanicus, yes.
It sounds so wrong, Santosh. And I was going to say, oh, that was different times, but I was like, that was 2009 when I heard you tell that story.
Any time you have a participant in the healthcare, it can be on the healthcare side, but it's usually one of the patient's family freaking out about nothing. Right. Because we were in Miami, which is a very richly Hispanic city, status Hispanicus, absolutely. Yes.
I trained in New York City and we had status Hispanicus there too.
Oh, yeah.
We also had people that were tachycardic.
Bradycardic? That sounds bad.
Older Hispanic females are either one or the other. They're going to be the ay-ay-ay-ay-ay tachycardic with their heart beating fast, or they're like, oh, really brady.
Yes.
And again, we refer to it as ITAC for exactly the reason Susanna said, because very often these older females will say, ay-ay-ay-dios. Ay, madre, ay, this. And it will get closer and closer together until it just sounds like one big ay.
One big ay, 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 exactly.
Which keeps pace with their heartbeat.
Right, right.
Oh, wow.
Now, I had not heard of the oh, bradycardic, but it stands to reason. What I had heard of is, did any of you get a chance to read the fantastic book House of God by Samuel Shem?
I did, yes. It's one of my favorites. I've
heard of it. Just heard of it.
So there's a couple great slang terms in there that I still heard during my training, and even a few we use today. Some of the more famous being the O sign, when you see a patient with their head tilted back, mouth open in an O, and that's usually an indication that maybe things aren't going quite as well,
right,
or they are healthy.
Even better than the O sign is the Q sign, where it's the O sign plus a tongue
plus
hanging out.
Plus a tongue. If you see a tongue, and you can imagine that it takes a lot for a person to be so far out medically that their tongue actually lolls out. So
that's different from the O sign in the Kama Sutra.
No, where, that's not a sign. That's not a medical sign. That's a face.
Oh, that O face. Okay,
that's an O
right.
face. Exactly.
Thanks for clarifying that.
Yes, there's a difference between an O sign and an O face.
But now, if you start having ITAC when making your O face, that's a different story entirely.
No, that's actually that's
no.
Good
but thing. The O sign is on a face, though, right? It's a particular. It's a look on a face.
It is, but the
it is a face.
O sign is a sign of distress versus O face, which is a sign usually of pleasure, of pleasure in there.
Mark.
Getting eye tack, so if you go I during your O face, first of all, impressive because you can contort your O face and still make eyes. But that's a good sign.
Well, one of the things I always liked about when you first told me about status Hispanicus and ITAC, you also told me that normally the eldest male or the next eldest female would come in and practice Spanish CPR. on said patient.
Yeah, so and, the Spanish CPR is you have to sit the eye tacky individual down in a chair, hold their hand, and you wave a napkin in front of their face to fan them. And at about, you know, maybe 10 beats per second, 10 beats per minute, 10 beats, nice, slow, and that's your CPR. It's very important.
Oh, I've seen it on a telenovela once.
If this is a Catholic Latino family, you can chant the rosary. Yeah, that's advanced CPR for status Hispanicus, yes. Very
good. Oh, my goodness.
Certainly, our slang is not restricted to patients. It's also used in and among each other.
Oh, yeah.
To refer to different departments. We often refer to surgeons as cowboys.
Mm-hmm. You can be a cutter.
Anesthesiologists as gas passers. You can be a cutter.
You can be a cutter. Uh-huh.
Why don't we go through each of our departments and maybe say a little slang that's unique to our particular field. Ward, you're in the emergency room, usually the entryway. What are some what's some slang that you use or hear in and around your department?
Oh, well, I think the emergency room is the birthplace of the original acronym GOMER, right?
Oh, short for get out of my emergency room.
Get out of my emergency room. And I think that was more of a saying that was being said back in the late 90s and early 2000s. This is also mentioned in House of God, but essentially it's someone who really doesn't belong in the ER, either because that person really doesn't have an emergency and should be seen by their primary care physician, or that they're so sick that we don't want them in the ER. They should be in the ICU or in the operating room.
Right.
So anybody we really don't want in the ER for an extended period of time, which is really everyone. but, you know, it's kind of a sliding scale.
The ER is also famous for the more modern version of the GOMER, the frequent flyer.
Yeah.
Perfect slang, especially for the travel medicine podcast.
Right. After 10,000 miles, you get a free cup of crappy ER coffee. Texting sign. That's another one we say in the ER.
So iPhone sign is extremely important.
For lay people who don't speak medical jargon, in medicine we talk about some specific signs like Hohmann's sign for DVTs, you know, deep vein thromboses.
Right.
These are clinical findings, you know, we kind of shorthand it into a sign. Anything wrong with that person chatting and texting away.
Or at least that it's not as serious as they've made it out to be.
Right, it's now, probably not a life-threatening, actively dying for a patient.
You know, somebody comes in complaining of 10 out of 10 belly pain but has a positive burger sign, meaning they're holding their McDonald's cheeseburger in one hand and texting on their iPhone. We have reason to suspect that maybe the pain is not quite as severe as we're being led to believe.
I stamped their frequent flyer miles.
Do you have any other names for different specialties that you use? Specialties, docs, nurses?
Of course not. I call them I say my esteemed colleagues in medicine, surgery, and anesthesia.
Sure.
Why do you?
That's a perfect example of another slang term Ward likes to turf patients.
Yes,
over to anyone who will take them.
That was actually a fantastic turf right there.
That was a great turf.
The Hollywood code, or the slow code, is something that doctors talk about. Now, I don't know if it's necessarily actually done, but a Hollywood code is a doing CPR on essentially someone who's already deceased and has no chance of recovering. You know, stopping short and just saying, hey, you know what, this person is done, sometimes is tough emotionally for family members who are nearby. The code is more, CPR that's going on is actually more beneficial for everyone around the recently deceased.
It's called the Hollywood code because it is all flash and no substance. Like the ones you see on television shows where they just put the fist against the chest and go, why? Live, damn you, live! Not today!
Not today! In the ICU as well, so very familiar with that, too.
Praz, I'm going to take a moment here to welcome you to the show. This is your first appearance with us, but you are joining as one of the hosts in Season 3. And you are both an ICU doc and an anesthesia doc.
Yes, sir.
So you certainly have a whole host of both medicine and surgery slang I'm sure you could share with us.
Yes, yes. Starting with, I guess, names for us. Well, I've heard gas passer. I've heard gas monkey. Josh, courtesy of Josh, of course.
Well, that's more specific to Praz than the field of anesthesia in general. He just has a monkey-ish sort of look about him.
He does.
This is the reason I don't have a picture. Some people might also call us the cows, because the surgeons are the cowboys and they're always riding us.
Very nice.
The only name for us that really bothers me on a regular basis, and I find this being done pretty much everywhere, is when they refer to me as simply anesthesia.
Not like my name.
Right. I mean, it's particularly insulting to me, especially when I... Because this isn't just where I am now. This was at my last job. This was, I think, in residency as well. I'd walk into the room, and the nurses or whoever would be like, okay, anesthesia's here. Your doctor will be in later.
To me.
You're just an abstract concept. Floating cloud of gas.
Basically.
That's more insulting than gas monkey.
Well, at least...
When he walks in, I'm like, hey, gas monkey.
Yeah.
But you are at least directing... To the individual.
Yeah, you're demoted from human to monkey, but, you know, at least it's an individual.
At least I'm me.
I want to add a few words in my defense here.
Oh. Yeah, Praz is making me look
so I'm sorry that you find anesthesia offensive. It's actually good to hear that because I didn't realize it. But as a surgeon, when I want to talk to whoever's on the other side of the curtain dealing with the anesthesia of the patient, sometimes I don't know who's on the other side because anesthesiologists tap each other out when you take breaks and you do whatever you need to do. Sometimes it's a CRNA who's a nurse anesthetist and not the anesthesiologist. So I don't know how or who to address. So I just say, hey, anesthesia, how's it going up there? But now that I know that it's offensive, I'll try my best to change my practices.
Alternatively, Praz, you could just start responding with, yes, surgeon?
Yeah, or scrub tech, or circulator.
No, don't do that to the nurses. They will kill you.
At first, I could see when I started my job, people didn't always know me, so referring to me as anesthesia might have been a little more. Now, most of them... either know my name or know who I am. So they at least make a conscious effort, as you do, and it is definitely appreciated. Actually, I had to correct a patient on that the other day. I walked into the room, and the patient asked was older and a Gomer, and it asked their daughter, hey, is this my doctor? And the daughter was like, no. In one of the few instances that I've actually ever interrupted anyway, I said, actually, ma'am, proceeded to show her my ID, and I explained to her that I am their doctor. So, anyway.
The best name for an anesthesiologist I ever heard was actually told to me from our research assistant, our former research assistant, who worked with an anesthesiologist named Dr. Gasaway. Huh. And can you imagine, Praz, if you could walk in like, hello, I'm Dr. Gasaway?
That was like the urologist, Dr. Glasscock. He's a good man, Glasscock.
Sometimes fate wins.
Oh, Susanna, I did want to ask, while we're staying like surgical or in the OR, so do you do the stereotypical surgeon thing of saying, oh, I've got my appendix is in room 534, and I think they're on my schedule for 2 o'clock, and my leg is coming in at 7.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
Guilty as charged.
So not, you know, like Mr. Smith, but yeah, my leg. And I think Josh and Ward, we're a little guilty of that on our rounding schedules in medicine too. Like we'll say, oh yeah, the sepsis in curtain 2. or, you know.
I could have, like, five Mr. Smiths. That's if true. I don't be like, this is pneumonia Smith, yeah. This is heart attack Smith.
That's okay. True. You do have to differentiate somehow, yeah.
Yeah.
See, we, in PEDS, we're sometimes accused of doing a cuteness rating scale.
Oh, that's terrible.
You rate children equally. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, this
some
totally...
people are accused of that as for adults, too.
You can do that. It's like, oh. It's like, okay, it's the ugly
well,
one.
Well, Praz, that's just called life. But...
Well, Santosh, I'm glad you brought up PEDS and your cuteness scale. Do you ever have any FLK children?
So that's a term right now in children's hospitals that are strictly prohibited.
What is FLK? Please elaborate.
One of the terms that you could put, and it would sometimes even appear in a chart, if you look probably before 1990, you would see FLK, which means funny looking kid. This means what this would mean is this child has some syndrome, a collection of anatomic.
No, Santosh, I actually want to correct you. Oh, it is specifically not a syndrome child. FLK syndrome or FLK refers to the facial characteristics of a child who just was born looking funny. They don't have a recognizable syndrome like Downs.
That's what I meant. Sorry, I did misspeak. You're right, Josh. So what it is you would say, oh, this kid has probably some syndrome. He has a collection of anatomical issues, a hand there, a face there, a something, and I can't put it together and call it something based on the knowledge that I have now, so it's just an FLK, a funny-looking kid.
We do not necessarily endorse any of these terms, but we've heard them, and it's fun to discuss.
It is. So these are things, you know, it would be, you know, in quiet little rounds, and if you needed to refer to someone quickly, the shorthand is really useful. I think all of you can agree. Kind of in the middle of the night, you know, and you've got a phone call. It's 3 a.m. and you've got maybe two brain cells firing, and you need to hear from whoever's on the ward, whether it's the nurse or the resident. You need like five words to describe what's going on with the patient, you know. So you need, you know. 50-year-old cirrhotic acute liver failure, you know, boom.
Yeah. Yes, at 3 in the morning, brevity is the essence of communication.
Yes.
You want it short to the point.
Right. So if you can use some of these terms to just quickly deliver what's going on, you know, and so instead of saying, oh, this child has this facial anomaly, this da-da-da-da, you just say, you know, 3-year-old FLK in with acute renal failure.
And that tells the person when they come the next morning, all right, I have a kid with renal failure. Don't think that the way he looks is part of his symptoms or presentation.
Boom. Exactly. So you've distilled a whole bunch of words into four.
I say, over in internal medicine, we have a lot of slang. It's probably the most because we are the docs who tend to live the most within the hospital, with the exception of surgeons who have to love their job or hate their family.
Yeah.
Not fair. I do both.
Boo. Well,
but a couple of my favorites, and ones that we do still, you know, we never chart, but we do hear around the break room, are there's always when elderly patients come in for a trip to the Adult Humane Society.
Aww.
Which is how we refer to, you know, the families who drop grandma or grandpa off at the ER right before a 3-day weekend.
Yes.
And they just say, you know, they seem a little more confused than normal, or something's not right, and they drop them off, and you're like, well, what? And they're gone, and they will come back on Monday.
And more than likely, they'll pay their bill in full, just fine. They just want to have Christmas alone.
Yeah. Of course, we've all heard the term bounce back, which is a patient who you send out and comes back around so quickly, they might as well be bouncing off wherever you tried to send them.
Right. And this has actually turned into a quality control type of jargon, which is a real how many bounces do you get, meaning that when you're discharging patients, you should actually realistically have a certain number of patients who come back, because there's always going to be a number of patients who you can't predict how they'll do at home.
Right, and illness begets more illness. That's just the way, right. You know, sometimes things work.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. Now, in one that's actually a little bit sweeter, Santosh, before, yeah. Just to interrupt you, is we've all heard the term CABG, which is short for coronary artery bypass graft. It's when the vessels in your heart have to be replaced because after a heart attack or causing a heart attack, just all the arteries and veins leading around your heart are too clogged up to be of any use. So you have to bypass them. Mm-hmm. So we refer to that procedure shorthand as CABG. And one of my absolute favorites, and I still use it to this day, is referring to our cardiac critical care unit, or our ICU for cardiac patients, as the CABG patch.
That's awesome. I like CABG patch.
Never heard
the
of that.
The less kind version is referring to the neurologic ICU as the vegetable garden.
Oh, I have heard that one, unfortunately, yes.
I have heard that one as well.
Yeah,
I've heard that one too, but I liked Cabbage Patch because it just sounds that so is sweet. Cute.
It sounds nice in a vegetable garden.
Oh, dear.
I've also had a lot of patients who suffer from dyscopia, which is simply a social admit for the inability to cope with whatever stresses life happens to be throwing at them.
That can be quite difficult.
Yes.
And that is not to say that these should not be addressed, but there are some people who probably don't need to be in a hospital setting to have their problems taken care of.
I agree, yes.
Now, I was on the phone with a non-medical friend of mine the other week, and they were calling me just saying, oh, well, how's work going? Because we were supposed to meet for lunch. And I actually had to cancel lunch on them. I said, oh, you know, I can't meet you. I'm getting hammered over here. And my poor friend.
Yeah. Yes. They said, oh, God, no, like a doctor from the 1960s.
You started without me.
Oh, my gosh, you're drinking on the job. You're a doctor. People's lives. And I had to stop and explain, because I had ceased thinking about it, that getting hammered has very different context in and out of the hospital. And I, of course, am referring to getting a bunch of patient encounters all at the same time, meaning the ER's calling me to do 3 admissions and the surgical floor is calling me for a consult and one of my patients may be crashing. That is getting hammered in the hospital.
Right.
That is not, however, what my friend thought.
No, and I think he very rightfully was worried.
Hey, what have you done?
No. Josh is awesome. He wouldn't do that.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's 3 midnightitis, where patients come in just waiting for the minimum 3 midnight stay to go to a sniff.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And the sniff is?
And a sniff is a skilled nursing facility referred to as a sniff because many of the elderly people who arrive there contain a certain elderly aroma.
So, sounds like Vegemite with, like, I don't know, with toothpaste or something. Josh sent me a list of British medical slang, and I'm looking at it. They're a little bit different, aren't they?
Yeah, let's find out what some of our colleagues across the pond and around the world use for doctor slang.
In Britain, they talk about a dirtbag index, and we have something like that here in America as well, believe it or not.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
But I think our dirtbag indexes are calculated differently. So over there, they multiply the number of tattoos with the number of missing teeth. Here, how do we calculate the dirtbag index here? It's
Lord, we use the tooth-to-tattoo ratio.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
And you want a positive ratio. You want more teeth than tattoos.
That's right. An index technically is a ratio, isn't it?
Well, the dirtbag index is you take the number of tattoos times the number of missing teeth, and that gives you an estimate of the days since the patient has last showered. Whereas the tooth-to-tattoo ratio is a visual determination of basic intelligence.
Okay.
Oh, and this one is so cute and clever. The CNSQNS.
Okay.
Label.
Okay, so what's CNSQNS?
QNS is a medical term for quantity not sufficient.
Not sufficient, yes. Uh-huh.
CNS, it's an acronym for central nervous system. In other words, the brain. So CNSQNS is just a cute way of saying someone is dumb.
It means central nervous system, quantity not sufficient. There was another term that I picked up when I was studying abroad called pumpkin positive. And that implies that if you were to place a light in the patient's ear, their entire head would light up just like a pumpkin. It's also known as the jack-o'-lantern sign.
Oh, that's very nice. I like that one.
Oh, our countries aren't so different after all.
Well, there's actually a couple other ones. Now, if we keep traveling around the world, there are a couple others that are really fun. Brazil has some great ones. They have, let's see, they refer to their interns as bagrinhos, which is a type of fish that gets in the way of real fishing.
Now, okay.
Do they call the hopeless case the Olympics?
Well, it's funny, actually. They don't do that. But instead of a Hollywood code, they refer to doing CPR in vain on a patient who won't make it as beating off angels.
Ooh, oh, wow. That's wow. Pretty good, actually. I like that.
That's very graphic, yeah.
Yeah, because you're shooting them away, yeah.
And then they also have, let's see, there's the estropico, which is a poor, unkempt obstetric patient, or Jeopardy.
Yeah.
They refer to, now this one I actually liked, the clinica eterna, or cuidado eterno, which is when I have a patient die, I usually say they had a celestial discharge, or they were discharged to heaven. It's a nice shorthand way of saying that somebody has passed away. So in Brazil, people get transferred to the eternal care unit.
Oh.
It's a transfer to the ECU.
Interesting.
It's next door to the vegetable garden, I'm sure.
That's a very, very sweet way of saying that. No, we definitely have shared jargon with other specialties. July being all the new residents come in.
I'm going to call back very briefly. I know we keep coming back to the status Hispanicus, but it is one of my favorites.
No, it's very visually.
Oddly enough, there are various terms for almost every race that run along some of these same types of lines. For a patient who gets, hello?
Yeah, no, I was scared that this was going to turn into degenerated to
racial
stuff.
No, this actually, it's not. There's ones that apply to a lot of different ones. So in the Hispanic population, they have status Hispanicus, but the same general appearance of a patient in the Black population is known as tachylordiosis, and that's felt to be a middle-aged to older Black female with a complaint rather than I to Dios.
Oh, that's
Lordy. Yeah, it's lordy, lordy, lordy,
lordy
with
lordy,
the interspersed
lordy,
occasional Jesus. So it's tachylordiosis.
That's a good one. Yes, absolutely it is.
Pokemon, of course, has really hit the airwaves recently. But a Pokemon in Japan, this is terrible, is the nurse assistant or medical student assigned to doing abscess draining in the ER.
Oh, it's getting into the pocket. Yeah, absolutely. Which is another jargon term that we use when we lance open a boil. You have to get into the pocket to sweep out all the gunk.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Something, when I think of you, Santosh, I always think of pediatrics, and I remember my little baby in the ICU, the neonatal ICU or something like that. And sometimes one of the doctors would tell me, oh, he went to the electric beach because these little babies that get jaundiced have to go sit under the UV lamps to help them get over it. And so they have these little eye protectors. It looks like they're going to the beach.
They're getting their tan on.
Yeah, so they're always just sitting under the lamps, hanging out with their skin exposed because they went to the electric beach.
The electric beach is a great place for babies to hang out. Very chill. It's a good time. Yeah, we get baby in a box. We don't hear bubble baby as much anymore.
Is there a jargon, an incubator or anything like that?
We usually go by the brand name or what it is. So a lot of them have animals painted on the side, and they have the ability to kind of raise the top of the incubator high up. You can just take the top off, and that one is called a giraffe.
Now, I'm going to give you guys a couple of terms, and I want you to tell me what slang you think they're referring to. Now, these are drawn from a database of slang from around the world. It could be London, could be Japan, could be Brazil. And let's see how similar we can get along. If somebody has suffered a podo-oral injury.
So that's putting your foot in your mouth.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
What about if somebody is pneumocephalic?
Airhead.
Yeah, that's an airhead. Yeah, and to go with that, I actually really like supratentorial.
Which is also another phrase is oligoneuronal.
So oligo is the Latin or the Greek for very few.
Oh, that's the Latin version of CNS, QNS.
Yes, that's true.
Mm.
Osteocephaly.
It's a bonehead.
Similar context.
Yeah.
Now, osteocephaly often goes along with the acronym FUBA, which I had not seen in writing, but I have heard versions of.
Oh, so please elaborate.
So FUBA stands for Found on Orthopedics Barely Alive.
Oh, it is.
Now, Susanna, I know that internal medicine not surgery... Internal medicine and surgery have a bit of a rivalry, but what is your opinion as a general surgeon of your orthopod colleagues? Do you share the same stereotypes within surgical departments?
We definitely hear them, absolutely. But in the end, we decided that the orthopods are still just the smartest of the lot. So for a little bit of background, to get into orthopedic surgery is extremely difficult, and you have to be quite intelligent to get the scores that you need and do all the things that you have to do to achieve this specialty. But then once you get there, everybody makes fun of them because they're jocks. They're usually the big, hefty guys that can do the heavy-duty work, and they're pounding with drills and nails and all this stuff. Everybody accuses them of not being very smart. But really, they're probably just smarter than all of us because they found out how to get to their sweet spot, do what they love, and then they don't have to take care of anything else because they're orthopods, and they don't have to take care of the patients. They have a hospitalist to do it for them.
Yeah,
Josh.
Girl.
So they think that, hey, you know, they are found on the orthopedic floor, barely alive. That's what the hospitalist would say because the orthopod pounded a nail into some bone and then left them there for the hospitalist to take care of. But in ortho lingo, usually when they do their rounds, which are at about 4 o'clock in the morning when everybody's asleep anyways, they do something where they say LGFD.
Oh,
looks good from door.
Looks good.
So they wander through, they take a peek, the patient's breathing, everything seems to be where it needs to be, looks good from door.
Acute lead poisoning, 185 grain injection.
Ooh, I know that one.
Someone got shot, right?
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
So 185 grain injection is a 9mm gunshot wound, whereas a 240 grain injection is a .44 caliber wound.
I see.
Another one. Lead-free bullets now.
Another one of my favorite Trauma Bay lingo slang would be the donor cycle.
The motorcycle accident victim, that's so sad, also made their way into the trauma bay by explicitly not wearing a helmet.
So when we have patients that have such severe neurologic trauma that there's no way to save them, we usually end up calling in the organ donation team to talk with the family and see if they would be willing to have that person give their organs to help other people with transplants and to help them get better or have a chance at life. A lot of times it's young, healthy males who are on these motorcycles without helmets and get into terrible accidents and end up with neurologic trauma and end up becoming donors. So we use the term donor cycle to be very appropriate, especially in the evening after a long winter and everybody takes their bikes out for joyrides.
Also in the trauma bay, we've all done the trauma handshake. And for the layperson, the trauma handshake is a rectal exam to check the spinal cord intactness.
Right. So if the very bottom of the spinal cord, which supplies the nerves to your rectal sphincter, to the inside of your thighs, if anything like that is wrong, find that out in a hurry by doing your rectal tone. No. Trauma handshake. I like that.
Yeah.
Now, here's one for you, Ward. Are you familiar with the breathalyzer test or the breathalyzer test?
Breathalyzer test? No, I'm not.
That's the micro test to check for gonorrhea and chlamydia. A positive test result means the patient may have been to either a brothel or they may just be a bro who has picked up an STD.
Nice. Oh, that's a new one.
Yeah, the breathalyzer. Or you could also check them for brothel sprouts, which are genital warts.
Ooh. Oh, God.
Nice.
On the same vein, we as surgeons have to deal with the acute abdomen, which is where somebody comes in with signs of some sort of intra-abdominal catastrophe. And sometimes you can get such severe abdominal pain when you have a really bad pelvic inflammatory disease infection, where you have some sort of STD that caused a lot of pus to go through the system and you get really, really tender in your lower abdomen. I had a surgeon who would call it PID, pus in dare.
Well, that's almost Minnesota. It's, oh, there's some pus in there, eh? I love that one.
I remember learning about that briefly in medical school. Actually, you brought up acute abdomens, right? And I thought about that. When I first learned about it, I was thinking in class, like, almost sounds like a pickup line. Like, I can actually picture myself going up to girls and being like, hey, you must have appendicitis because you got an acute abdomen.
Fail, dude.
I think...
No takers?
No, I might hate you a little for what you just did.
wait.
I don't know, I liked it.
Okay, that's the medical version of you must be Jamaican, because Jamaican be crazy.
To be fair, sometimes I tell my patients they have an adorable appendicitis.
Really?
There you go.
See? Appendicitis?
It's not just cute, it's adorable.
It's adorable.
Roz, have you ever heard of intubating somebody referred to as a PVC challenge?
A PVC challenge?
As you're putting a PVC pipe?
I have not, actually.
Well, that is, I don't know, it's somewhere in Europe. Sorry, it's not a well-organized database.
One thing I sort of started coining for myself. People these days tend to be a little bit more sensitive, and you can't outright say things that might be considered offensive in front of patients. So you find other very sneaky ways around it. In the operating room, particularly for me, I'd say what's called the difficult airway sign. Generally speaking, when we have to put an airway is basically a breathing tube that we place when we place someone on life support, on a ventilator. When we place a breathing tube in, some people are easier to place the tube in than others, and that depends on certain patient factors. And one thing that can make a patient difficult to intubate or put this breathing tube in are patients who are morbidly obese, have very thick necks, have short jaws, might be FLKs or others.
yes, because you do have jaw anomalies and FLKs, you're right.
Right, exactly. So anytime I see a morbidly obese person, rather than actually saying that out loud, I might say, oh, that guy's a Malampati 4, or hey, that guy's going to need a glidescope.
Check out the glidescope I'm going to need on that one.
There you go.
Heck of a glidescope. Glidescope.
You use them too, don't you?
We do, yeah. On very difficult airways and little kids, So glidoscope is the fiber optic scope where you can actually directly see the throat, right?
It's like they have the fiber optic scope with the thin, flexible one, and the glidoscope is the one that is more rigid. It's a curved, and you basically put it in the mouth, and it glides along the back of the mouth.
Gotcha.
So...
I have one more Brazilian one, and then I'll stop pulling from the database. It's too good. Like, there are just so many. Do you know, Praz or Susanna, what a Zorro belly is?
What? Hmm. Oh, I actually know this
multiple
one.
Multiple past surgeries?
Yep, multiple abdominal surgeries.
Get it now.
They've been slashed all over the place. Right. That is a good one. Something else that we have in the OR a lot, and I saw in one of the lists that you sent us, Josh, was the peek and shriek. And unfortunately, that's happened quite a few times when we go in to the OR to see what's going on, what's happened inside the belly, why are these people in so much pain, and you find out that it's a disaster, some horrible, not curable condition, like cancer everywhere. There's nothing you're going to be able to do for this patient. So we go in there, we take a peek, we shriek at how horrible it is, we just close it up and run away. So peek and shriek, that happens. Something else I thought of when we were talking about slang was how we say box. So you would think of boxing and that kind of thing. But when we talk about boxing, I say, oh, that patient boxed, or, oh, no, be careful what you're doing because you might box the kidneys. So when you think about it, if something dies, they go off into a pine box and get buried.
Right.
So it's become a way for us to talk about death. Oh, that patient boxed, it means they died. Or, oh, you boxed the kidneys, it means you killed off their kidneys and they need dialysis or something. So,
And we still use the elderly patients who survive a lot of these boxing situations are still referred to as coffin dodgers.
Wow. All right. Hey, dodge a bullet.
Meaning people you expect to have a poor outcome who, against all odds and expectations, manage to come out okay. So we do have one artful coffin dodger on our service.
Nice Dickens reference. I like.
Gives you guys a good look back into some of the slang that's used around, and feel free to send us any that you may have heard yourselves. This year has been so much fun, and it is only going to continue to get better. We have new hosts, new guests, new interviews, and hopefully more money. So here's the spiel at the end. That concludes our official language discussion. If you would like to support us financially as well as spiritually and emotionally, we do have a Patreon page now. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We can be rated and reviewed anywhere you find your local podcasts. And guys, the more reviews you give us, the more people come to the show. And it makes us feel good and we're happy. And you want me to be happy, don't you?
Please don't make me not happy, because then the rest of us suffer. So...
Quiet you! So, once again, a very special thanks to Susanna for rejoining us, and a welcome to Praz as our newest anesthetist, ICU surgical co-host on the show.
It's good to be here, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yay!
So, Praz, we bid you farewell as you go off to dreamland, and... Okay. Ward, Santos, Susanna, any favorite memories from the last season before we wrap it up and say goodbye?
Uh, Well, I've got to say that we've done so many wonderful journal clubs over this past year. This was a good year for journal clubs. So my personal favorite is covering all the new developments in antibiotics, where we're finding antibiotics up the nose, we're finding antibiotics in dirt, and the fear right now is really living in that post-antibiotic era. But I think with the work of some really amazing basic scientists, we're slowly just kind of gently pushing when we can say antibiotics are ineffective. We're kind of staving that day off a little bit.
Fantastic. And Ward, do you have any favorite moments from our last season?
Yeah, you know, I'm also a huge fan of journal clubs just because they're so, and we can cram a lot in and we can cover a wide variety of topics. One of my favorite ones was when we talked about blind emojis. I mean, it's Dr. Josh, Santosh and I trying to stay current and try to stay relevant against our aging selves. So that was fun.
And again, for those of you who have not heard the Blind Emojis episode, it turns out watching the Olympics, scientists have learned that people who have not had any kind of sight from birth make the same facial expressions for emotions as sighted people.
Yeah.
Meaning you don't have to know what sad looks like to make a sad face.
Nice.
Right.
And what about you, Suzanne? I know you haven't been able to join us too much this year, but do you have any favorite moments from the year?
Well, I must say, something I keep going back to when I go into the OR for taking out an appendix is the podcast that we did so long ago about the crazy Russian surgeon on an Arctic vessel who ended up being the only person able to do an appendectomy, and he did his own. I love it. I tell everybody about it. I might idolize the man.
Nice.
Well, you two certainly have a lot in common because I believe, Susanna, we do have an episode where we discuss how you cut an infection out of your own head.
Not an infection. A worm.
Oh,
I'm
worm.
Sorry.
That's
a bot fly.
Yeah.
A bot fly.
Bot fly larva.
That you carved out of your own head.
Yeah,
so,
I did.
It's a crazy Susanna, American surgeon.
Susanna is by far the most adventurous of our group, and Ward, Susanna, and I, while we are not putting up episodes over the next couple weeks, we'll be traveling to Russia and Mongolia and returning with many more stories. And I have to say, my favorite episode of this year, and it's tough, they're all my children, my funny-looking kids, but I really liked our very first episode of the season about the witch doctors, because we did get a chance to meet with some African medicine men, and I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of opportunities we find in Russia, Mongolia, and abroad to interact with medical professionals in other worlds and cultures.
Yeah, cool. This is, I think, one of the best times is when we actually get out into the wide, wide world. And I know, Susanna, that's part of your gig, is to travel around and heal. And Josh, you do that too as a locums physician. But I think to see how other cultures view medicine and health is just a wonderful thing, and it's a real gift.
So next season, things you have to look forward to include another chat with the witch doctor, as there is some footage we did not get around to recording, as well as learning about medicine in Russia, a talk with an anesthesiologist or anesthetist, and a whole bunch of new interviews, as well as a return to a chat with our fellow friends over at the Space Medicine Society, and who knows, maybe even a new drama with better sound editing and effects. You can never guess what I'm going to come up with next. So everyone who's listened, thank you so, so much. We will be back in October with even more clips, more travel, more medicine, comedy, and misadventure. But until next time, as always, happy travels.
Bye, guys.
Happy travels. Bye.